KFMB. San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening. Happy Thanksgiving Sunday to everybody out there. I'm Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer. We're coming to you with 50,000 watts of power, covering not just San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up to Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now it is time to introduce my illustrious co-host. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He is a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable of San Diego. He's a philanthropist. He's a running enthusiast and marathoner, and more on that in a second, and all-around good guy and family office expert to many high-net-worth families. He is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Joe. I'm a little bit tired.
You want to explain?
Well, Thanksgiving morning, we had my big charity event in downtown Oceanside. Again, I'm the founder of the Move Your Feet Before You Eat Foundation. So we had about 10,000 runners, about 15,000 people at the finish line. We raised over $100,000 for a variety of local charities in North County coastal region of San Diego. I, of course, put in 13.1 miles because I always run the 5-mile course before the race, because my job as the founder of the foundation is to remove all the trash and palm tree fronds that blow down on the course overnight from the course. Then I run the 5-miler for Sirius, and then for the 8:30 race, which is a 5K, 3.1 miles for those of you who don't do metric, I run that in a turkey costume. Wow. And so it's a lot of work, man.
And that picture's been on the paper.
It's been before. In the paper. It's all over the internet. And, you know, I got all my friends sending me emails saying, I can't believe I do business with that turkey.
Well, we're going to talk some turkey tonight.
But on the show, tune on December 2nd, because we don't have all the numbers in yet. I'll talk more about it on our Sunday evening show on December 2, and I'll have the final math in front of me as opposed to these gross estimates.
Yeah. And, last Sunday we had a pretty terrific show. We had the 34th mayor of San Diego, Mayor Jerry Sanders. And last Saturday night I had the privilege to attend a huge celebration in his honor down right by Petco Park, right by the new library. They had a huge block party. When I arrived there, they had the huge tents from Cavalia, so there was a horse aroma wafting through the air as you entered, which kind of reminded some people of City Hall. But as you walked in, there was a huge screen and stage, and it said Jerry's Pub. So I knew we were in for a good time. You know, we talked about his enthusiasm for beer last week, and they had Rockola perform that night. So as people were entering and the crowd got larger and larger, they had a whole slew of food, and a couple of bars on the right side. And about 7 o'clock at the far end of the block, the gates open, and in comes 110 members of the San Diego State Marching Band playing through the crowd, well, all the way up to the stage. I mean, it was really, really exciting. And then, of course, there was a very nice video and vignettes of the mayor's career. And then he got up there and said a few words with his family, and then Rockola played. And it was just a great time. And so Jesse Knight, CEO of Semper there, or excuse me, SDG&E now, and Dr. Irwin Jacobs was there, and Mayor Filner-elect was there, Mr. Congressman-elect Peters was there, so it was nice to see a lot of Democrats, Republicans, everybody get together and having a great time. So
sounds fun. I did something political on Sunday. I went to the Run Women Run event, which is not a running organization. It's an organization that encourages women to run for political office, particularly younger women who want to dip their foot into public service, where we feted or congratulated two outgoing public servants, Senator Christine Kehoe, as well as our local county supervisor, Pam Slater-Price, who's been at this for over 20 years. And so it was a really neat event. I really liked it because there were 130 people there. I was one of only four guys. The other three guys brought their wives with them. Mm-hmm. So the numbers were in my favor. I love events where I'm outnumbered 126-1.
Well, we're up to 20 women in the U.S. Senate now.
We've and 81 in Congress, so it's 101 in total. First time the country has been in triple figures with representatives. So that's super, super new.
So we've got another 30 to go in the Senate, try and get things evened out there, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, with that, I know we have a very important guest.
We're supposed to do a show tonight, so let's get going.
I'm
going to
let you introduce our terrific guest.
Colleen Brophy with UBS, our major sponsor, UBS. She's an executive director, and she actually oversees the fixed income team within UBS. And she's also, I think, going to give us a report on what's going on back in New York, New Jersey, because like many of our UBS guests, she resides there and, of course, had to experience a rather difficult circumstances and situation that the Superstorm Sandy brought. So, Colleen, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Yes, well, we're getting back to normal back here on the East Coast. I'm just going to take a bit of time because, as everyone knows, the weather, Sandy, was devastating to a lot of areas that were particularly hard hit. But I'm glad to say they opened another tunnel today. I think they opened the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel today, and they're still trying to get some forms of New Jersey Transit up, one of which is my train, but we're making do. And people have been very good about, you know, taking the ferries and buses and backup things like that. So slowly but surely getting back to normal. And in one thing we saw yesterday was the kids in our town got to go trick-or-treating yesterday. So 4 days before Thanksgiving, they get to do their trick-or-treating.
But the challenge there is many people probably had to eat the candy that they had for Halloween.
Exactly.
Because they couldn't go to the store.
Without power, you were definitely eating all that candy. Andy, so I think a lot of people probably ran out.
Well, is the power, what percentage of people are still without power, would you guess?
I would say it's probably, you know, I had heard that parts of Brooklyn, there were some areas where the electric, utility providers were going door to door to make sure that people had their power up. And Staten Island, I think, was the same thing. The other areas where I guess there's been, you know, hasn't been any power have been down on the Jersey Shore, the beaches, Manilocan, Point Pleasant, some areas like that, where the houses just came off. You know, basically it came off the ground, and they had the natural gas lines, which were up in the air, causing fires. So what they had to do is shut it all down. So there's probably areas down there. Well, I know there's areas down there where you can only go in the daytime, and then there's a curfew, and you have to be out of the town after certain hours.
Wow. And good coordination between the federal, state, and local emergency agencies for this?
So far, we're seeing. I mean, that's what we're seeing so far. You know, I know there's been some complaints about out of Staten Island that FEMA hasn't been quite getting in there as quickly or authorizing as much money. But I think that might have changed with the president coming in last week that, you know, let's get these checks written so people can get on with their lives and, you know, do the recovery that needs to be done.
Yeah, it was nice to see him and Mayor Christie, you know, taking the moment.
That was Governor Christie.
Governor Christie to, address the issue together. And, that was just, you don't see that too often.
and there's been a huge outpouring in terms of, you know, donations for people who were particularly hard hit, including Staten Island, including Breezy Queens, and down the Jersey Shore, Seaside, and Manilocan, and Bayhead, and Point Pleasant, where people just, you know, cleaned out their closets, sweaters, blankets, stuff to, you know, cleaning, gloves to clean their houses, everything that could possibly be given, food, water, et cetera, because, I mean, and it was just immediate, the assistance. So that's been, you know, a nice thing about people's generosity.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we typically like to start the show, Colleen, with getting into our professional's biography. So would you like to, go over your background a little bit, education-wise and history, and then we'll get into the financial stuff. Sound good, Richard?
Let's do that. Okay. I know you joined UBS about, 16 years ago?
Yep, just over 16 years I've been with UBS, so I guess you consider me a lifer here. And, I work within the private bank division of UBS. I'm the head of the fixed income group here. I started out in the business actually as a municipal credit analyst, actually doing, you know, municipal credit research on individual municipal issuers, anything from the state to the local level, you know, little cities and towns throughout the country and higher education. I've done credit analysis also on money market funds, corporate and municipal, and I've also been a trader in prior life. So I have a pretty kind of generalist background that I've done both taxable corporate bonds, government bonds, etc., as well as municipals on the other side. Currently what we do here is I run the fixed income group, but I manage anything overnight all the way out, longer bonds, 30-plus year bonds, for clients, both domestic, meaning U.S. market, i.e. treasuries, agencies, corporates, municipals, and or international bonds, so bonds outside of the U.S. market.
Hmm. So can I start with... Oh, we're good. Well, we're going to go to break, and then I'll start.
Stay tuned there, Colleen. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after these announcements. All right, Colleen, I hope you're old enough to remember that Bonanza music.
Yeah.
We're back with Colleen Brophy of UBS, a senior strategist, and with Richard Musso. Richard, you want to continue?
Yeah, Colleen, I was just going to ask a real general question before we talk about some specific things. So you head up... the fixed income team, which means you're focused on bonds. Just a real general question. My grandmother, now deceased, the way she used to invest in bonds is she would buy a bond and hold it until the bitter end.
Yep.
And then cash it in. Do people still invest in bonds the way my grandmother did?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think there's still people who do that. But I think it's become more difficult to do that given where we are in the interest rate cycle with rates being so low now. A lot of people are hesitant to go out longer in terms of the interest rate environment because there's not as much to be gained as if you went back. I mean, just look at the extreme of the late 80s where we had double-digit, interest rates at that point. Mm-hmm. So there are people who do have a buy-and-hold strategy. One of the things that has become more difficult for someone who wants to just do that by themselves is that there's such a lack of supply, other than obviously the treasury market issuing, but on the corporate side, even on the municipal side to a certain extent, that it does help to have someone out there advocating for you or buying those bonds for you, even if it is a buy and hold strategy.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I know you have a heavy emphasis, I guess you mentioned that, on global fixed income.
So our group is one of the few who do a separately managed bond portfolio, so it's not a mutual fund.
Okay.
And what we believe is, we've been in a declining interest rate environment since the financial crisis, right? And we've had positive bond returns, but those returns have gone down year by year as interest rates have come down, right? With the Fed easing, mm-hmm. interest rates all-time lows. And what we see now is that we believe that in a lot of cases, the developed markets aren't where you want to be positioning yourself for the, let's say, the decade ahead, if you will. We believe that actually there are better opportunities in markets that are emerging, that will have growth, that are commodity-based, that have their fiscal house in order. So what we do, we have a lot of global and international bond portfolios where we're investing in those markets outside of the U.S. So as an example, Australian dollar, we'd be investing in Australian local bonds there. Russian ruble would be another example there. Mexican peso would be another example. And what we're doing is we're making the decisions based upon our outlook for the respective bond markets, for the respective currencies, clearly, and where we see opportunities going forward.
So you mentioned some locales where you might see some opportunity. Let's back up a little bit.
Sure.
Because I think what's on the mind of most of our listeners is, of course, what happened over the summer and throughout the fall in Europe. I think... I know the major central banks of the world, I guess you could say they've sort of all tried to stimulate monetary policy with probably a more unified approach than they've ever exhibited before. Are things calming down in Europe at all? I mean, I noticed you didn't mention, I guess Russia's sort of east of Europe, but...
But not having the same problems, and that's a little
exactly.
sad to say, right?
Exactly.
What I think is So if you look at the major bond markets out there, including the U.S., I mean, you're going to have the three largest bond markets out there are clearly the U.S., Europe, and Japan, mm-hmm. okay? Historically, if you didn't like, let's say, the dollar, you would go to yen. Or if you didn't like the yen, you might go to euro. Or, euro, not like euro, you go to dollar, etc. The problem is right now, and we've all heard that expression, it's the best house in a bad neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
All three of the major economies have problems. Different problems, but we all have problems. I mean, in the U.S., it's our fiscal cliff that's overhanging us. In Europe, it's growth and what's going to happen with Greece. More importantly, even disregard Greece, what's going to happen with Spain and Japan, it's like, with the change in government, is Japan ever going to come out of this slump? So when you have those type of problems going on in the largest economies in the world, what we see is investors are looking for, where do I go? Where should I go for my safe haven and or growth out there? Where are there opportunities? So what we've chosen to do is, and you know, in our portfolios, we're overweight dollar, but we're underweight euro, and we're definitely underweight yen. And we've chosen to take those allocations as opposed to being in those markets and move those into markets which we believe have healthy balance sheets, where they're going to be, you know, they're not going to be in have the same problems as the big three. So Australia is an example there. It's a AAA rated entity. It's, you know, it's commodity based, but yet, and it does have a lot of reliance on growth out of China, so you have to watch that. But the fact is, we believe that that's where you want to be positioned. That's where you will get better returns in the future. Same thing with Canada is another example there. You know, much healthier banking system, much healthier government system. So those are opportunities we see as far as, like, the developed countries out there. And you are seeing other investors begin to look at these markets as they say, hey, you know what, I'm tired of the problems I keep hearing in Europe. Where else can I go? Where are there opportunities? So in a lot of cases in Europe, what you're seeing is the pound sterling has been a benefit, the UK market, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, even to a lesser extent. Mm-hmm.
So can I ask you to explain a term, because this is a fairly new term and a lot of our listeners sure. don't really understand it. We call it OMT, the outright monetary transactions, a fairly new phenomenon in response to the euro crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that is and how that works and why
sure.
it's important?
That's been established as a it came to the point where, you know, we were really running up, the ECB has been reactive, not proactive, which has been a problem. Why we keep going into these crises until, you know, something is finally done. So the outright monetary was established to basically provide liquidity in the market, to not allow any country to really just step away from the European mm-hmm. Union. That the ECB would support the euro no matter what it takes, really is what was done. In the case of Spain, and that's really why it was established, was Spain's yields at the time were hitting above 7%. So what we were looking at was Spain was unable to access the markets because there was a fear that the European Union was falling apart. So a backstop had to be put in place that would allow Spain to access the market and that would calm down market fears that the European Union was about to dissolve or that a country was going to leave the European Union.
Kind of a question when we about the 2003, 4, 5, when the interest rates were going so low, and then I also see gasoline prices going up $4 a gallon plus, and that kind of confused me. And of course, that affects investors too when rates go low. So what were people thinking at that time? I mean, what was the thought around your office about what was happening to rates? Was that a good thing or?
I think a lot of the rates were driven by central banks easing more than anything else. There was still the fear out there that you know, things weren't going to work out. You know, the problems in Europe, the China's slowdown in growth, the U.S. fiscal cliff was, even though it's become a much bigger focus now, that was weighing on the markets. So, I mean, there was a global central bank intervention to basically bring rates back down lower. And I think that was more to do with what was happening in the market, not that rates should have been that much lower. In a way, it was, you know, it was central banks pushing those rates down to provide liquidity in the market there.
And of course, it affected the housing market then. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. But, well, let's hold that thought. We've got to take a little longer break now. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after new sports, weather, and announcements. All right, we are back with It's Your Money and Your Life, and Richard wants to thank some sponsors.
We have a lot of sponsors to thank. Of course, UBS, and we also have in studio Mr. Michael Quaranta, also his partner, Drew Freitas. Thank you very much. Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited. Carl, thanks for all your help in raising funds for a variety of charities the week before Thanksgiving with some events that we did together. My Charity, Junior Achievement, and many other great ones. Cost Segregation Initiatives and Mr. Joel Gruskin. He's going to be our guest on December 2nd. If you own commercial real estate and want to improve your cash flow, don't miss that show. Jason Kruger and Signature Analytics, the best CFO company in San Diego. Our favorite CPAs, Polito Epic CPAs with Don Epic and Paul Polito. Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal, the best estate planning attorney in town, and, of course, our favorite business bank on the planet, Mr. Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton, Dan Yates with Regents Bank. Thank you to all of our sponsors. We couldn't do it
without
you.
Yes, and if you would like to get in touch with any or all of them, just go to iymoney.com. That's our website. There's a tab for sponsors. All their contact information is there. UBS is in prime position there. Everything's there, phone numbers, emails. So if you have any questions about anything, feel free. Also, Richard's email's on there. So is mine. And if you want to hear a repeat broadcast of this show or any of our prior shows, there's an online radio archives tab as well. All the podcasts are there. We actually take out the commercials so you could hear the whole thing in about 42 minutes. So
and there's, well, there's a really cool photo of us with Mayor Jerry Sanders, too.
That's right.
Really
right
cool.
Right on the homepage.
Right on the homepage. So anyway.
Back to our guest, Richard.
Colleen, we were talking about big countries like, well, the countries in Europe. Let me ask a couple quick questions about another really big country. That would be China. I know news from China recently has been fairly positive, although I don't know that we always believe what China's putting out. Some of it sometimes sounds like propaganda. I know they're sort of engaging in a big public works program right now, but it maybe isn't as large as people thought. What's going on in China?
Sure. I think earlier this year there was fears that, you know, the third issue that we really had to worry about was China. Was China going to have a hard landing? And, you know, the Chinese government, and like you said, everything that comes out has to be met with a bit of skepticism in terms of what they're reporting there, because they've targeted a number of 7.5%. So, there was fear that we were coming in below 6, and they did implement a public works program, not to the same degree as they did in 2008, not as much, but it seemed to have been working out. They're saying that the housing prices in more cities have rose recently. The transition to power has been made. We'll see how well that goes. Probably, in this first 5 years, we're not going to see too much of a difference in terms of the overall government, but it'll be the next 5 years where we see something. What I tend to look at when I'm looking at what's really coming out of China is we want to look at China's trading partners in terms of, you know, what do we see there? What are the numbers being reported? A good example, again, is Australia. What is Australia reporting in terms of their numbers? Because it's giving you an indication, is China really slowing down? What are we really seeing in terms of the slowdown? So it's a check on the numbers that come out of China there. But overall, at this point, I would say we're probably going to avoid a hard landing. Seems to be a lot more interest in commodity-based economies at this point. So I think that the markets are beginning to say, hey, maybe they did avoid a hard landing, at least on this point, and that they're going to continue to grow, not to the, you know, extent that they did prior to the financial crisis, but definitely, you know, at their 7-ish plus targets there.
And don't a lot of Latin American countries have fairly strong ties to China as well?
Yep, exactly. That's what you see a lot of out of South America. Exports in terms of, you know, just basically that's kind of their lifeline, if you will. And what we believe is, you know, if U.S. market is, you know, for lack of a better word, developed enough, where we want to be doing selling goods these days is into Latin American economies, into growing economies, like Brazil, as an example.
Makes sense. So previously you mentioned some currencies that, or some countries whose bonds you might have some interest in more so than the big three. You mentioned Australia, the Russian mm-hmm. ruble, Canada, and Mexico. Can you explain to our listeners how we're not just talking about interest rates when we talk sure. about investing in bonds? Obviously, with these foreign bonds, we have foreign currency involved.
Sure. So unlike on the equity market, where if you want to buy a non-U.S. corporate equity, as an example there, you can sometimes get that in the ADR market, so you can buy it in the U.S. market. In the case of bonds, when you buy a bond outside of the U.S., you have to buy that currency in order to transact in it in general. So when we make a decision, Australia as an example, but when we want to buy Australian bonds, we actually have to buy the Australian currency, the Australian dollar, versus our U.S. dollar position there. So when you do that, that has, obviously it has risks that are associated with it, but given where interest rates are globally at the all-time lows, more of your return will come off of your currency movement. So when you make a decision, and when we make a decision to buy outside of the U.S. market, first and foremost, is, do we believe that currency will appreciate against the U.S. dollar? If we do, then we've made the decision to do that. We'll buy the currency and the bonds in that local market there. And the unique thing about UBS and the private bank is we have what's called a multi-currency capabilities. Not many other firms have this. To be quite frank, what that means is if we buy a $50 million yen position, it's going to show as the $50 million yen, which is known as the local currency, but it also shows as your dollar equivalent. And that's done every day on what the FX rate is there. So what's nice about that is you have a clear picture of what you own in the local markets as well as what your dollar-based equivalent of it. More importantly, at the end of the year, when you go to report your taxes, as we all know, the IRS is not going to allow you to report in other currencies. You have to have everything translated back to dollar, and that's what our platform enables us to do.
So by private bank, that means you can do things that maybe some other providers can't do. For example, custody services. You were just mentioning foreign exchange services.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody wants to invest in commodities, for example, like gold, how does the private bank facilitate that?
That's actually one of our bigger offerings, as a matter of fact. We offer gold. You can buy it through a commingled vehicle, or you can buy it as a segregated product. And if you buy gold segregated, you actually will have bars that have your number on them that are held in the vault in Switzerland. Ooh. And for our clients who want to go over and go visit their gold, they can actually take a trip to go visit the gold.
Maybe inscribe their names on it.
And in a lot of cases, depending upon the product offering, it's actually cheaper than owning on GLD.
Huh. Oh, is it really?
Wow. From a management fee, yeah.
Well, that's great to know.
Custody fee.
So can you explain to our listeners how the spread, the difference between the purchase and the sale price works, and how, I guess because you're a private bank, you can offer a narrower spread. Am I reading that right?
On the
gold bars.
On the gold? Well, because we basically traffic in it a lot more, we actually have a better offering on it.
Okay.
That really comes more off the investment bank where we're doing the deals with, and I can have somebody come on and discuss a little bit more. I don't really buy gold in our portfolio, so
sure.
I'm not an expert on it. I apologize.
Okay, but because you're doing such volume.
Yeah, it's the same thing. We're one of the largest buyers of gold and holders of gold, so clearly we're doing more volume in gold market there, and we get better execution on it. And same thing on some of the FX, on the foreign exchange, when we're doing other currencies. Again, we're number one or number two historically in currency transactions, so our spread is tighter.
I see. So you work with a lot of wealthy families. You're still seeing a strong interest in owning gold?
Yeah. I mean, it's died down a little bit here, but, you know, it's still there's some people who buy it as investment, and then there's some people who buy it as a safety feature. So there's two different kinds of investors who come in there.
And there's an interesting term that's involved in buying gold. Can you explain to our listeners what this means? Because a lot of people hear this, but they don't know it. What does it mean to buy at spot? That doesn't mean you take your dog to see your gold, right?
No, you're just at the actual market price there, yeah.
Okay. So no market, but the actual market
exactly.
Price. Gotcha.
Wow,
there's the music again.
It is. We're heading into our last break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Vince Money in Your Life after these short announcements. All right, we're back for the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life with Colleen Brophy of UBS, Senior Fixed Income Portfolio Manager and Wealth Management Solutions Expert, and over to Richard to take it on home.
Thanks, Joe, and thanks again to UBS for sponsoring our show. Also for Mr. Michael Coranta coming here into studio on a holiday weekend to hang out with his fellow Italians. Everybody in the room has a vowel at the end. Even Colleen has a vowel at the end of her name, if you consider a Y a vowel. So.
I married an Italian.
There you go. There you go. Paisano and Paisana. Okay. So, Colleen, there's... I'm going to start with the election. The recent election a couple weeks ago, obviously the Democrats did fairly well. The Republicans, all my Republican friends, are walking around in a very depressed state. With regard to bond investing, whether it's domestic or with a foreign focus, does the election have much effect, in your opinion, as to what's going to be happening going forward?
Well, I mean, I would say probably the biggest effect in the market. We're still coming out of this financial crisis, so I think the biggest effect on this market is really probably going to be more on the municipal side than on the taxable side. But just breaking the markets down to three. If you look at the Treasury market, the Treasury market's going to be dictated by what the Fed does. You know, quantitative easing three, Operation Twist, you know, any type of Fed intervention is going to determine what's happening with the Treasury rates, as well as any flight to quality. If we see fear come out of Europe, you're going to see a flight to quality there. So, you know, and no big surprise here saying Treasuries are overvalued. They may stay that way for a while, you know, but that's what we see in terms of that. In terms of the mortgage market, the Fed's purchases of mortgage-backed securities, we view that as very beneficial for anyone owning mortgage-backed securities, probably going to see a little bit more gain out of that part of the market. And then on the corporate side, what we're suffering from on U.S. corporates is there's just not enough bonds out there, quite frankly. Corporations are sitting with highest all-time cash balances since the 1950s. There's not a big incentive to issue for anything. And you are seeing some companies issue to do stock buybacks, et cetera, or just because it's so cheap to issue. But just the supply that's out there doesn't quite meet the demand. So I think you'll probably continue to see corporate bonds rally from here. High yield, a bit pricey, overvalued at this point, but it could continue its run. And then on the municipal side, there's two different sides to it. One side, which we're hearing a lot of talk about actually today, was, oh, do we lose the exemption on the municipal side? I think that's going to be on the table on a continuous battle there, but I don't think it's going to go away over the near term. I think what we will see, and in particular probably seeing it in California, is we're going to see more demand for municipals because given that Obama won, that the Republicans are going to have to concede something, taxes are going up. And we've been saying this for a while. So high quality essential revenues, GO bonds, you know, and particularly in higher tax states like a California, we view those as an important asset class to have in your portfolio there.
Yeah, we, thanks to Proposition 30, now have one of the highest marginal rates in the history of the country with regard to state income tax, 13.3% potentially for California residents, retroactive to this year, 2012. That wasn't kicking in next year. That's this year. So, yeah, granted, there's a lot of cash on the sidelines with large corporations. There's also a lot of cash on the sidelines with very wealthy families. Can you talk a little bit about cash management and what these people might be doing with regard to their cash since putting it in a CD at the bank? I think you actually have to write a check to the bank now to do that, right?
Yeah, pretty much there. Yeah, I mean, with money market funds, basically, you know, it's 0 to maybe 10 basis points, 0.10%, I should say. It does make sense to look for better opportunities to put your cash aside. Now, you don't want to take risk in your cash portfolio. This is your safe money. But the Fed has said we're on hold till 2015, and that's at least, okay? Right now it's 2015. But also, more importantly, what I think people need to remember is that Fed has said when we do raise rates, it's not going to be a big increase in rates. It's going to be a very gradual process, which makes sense because given this economic downturn we've had, it's not the same as in prior downturns. It's much more severe. Therefore, when we recover from it, it's going to take a longer time here. So what we do are cash management portfolios overnight to about 3.5 years. The average is about 1.5. So it's putting you mostly, you know, the longest part of your portfolio right now is about 2015 in the separately managed. And clients can have that portfolio managed for them about $1 million. And, you know, they can talk to their advisors at UBS regarding that. But just as, you know, and it's a gross yield and, you know, no guarantees or whatever, but it's approximately about a 1% yield right now on a gross yield on that portfolio. So that may make sense for clients who are sitting on a lot of cash who don't want to sit there with the money market funds getting zero. And or clients who, you know, don't want to diversify because this is a diversified portfolio of holdings. It's not one single creditor there.
And so question, do you think that if we get some fairly certain income tax and estate tax policy, say by January of 2013, that some cash might start freeing up from the sidelines? In other words, do you think that some large companies and some high net worth families simply aren't making investment decisions because they can't really cost benefit after tax what it is that they're doing because we don't know what the taxes are going to be?
Absolutely. I think that's a huge problem right now. As far as the corporate side, they don't really have any guidance. And this money that the Fed has pumped out into the system isn't getting out there. I mean, you know, banks, even just simply the banks, it's not getting out to be from the banks, from a lending standpoint to small businesses, from the corporate side, from the investment side. So we're not seeing that because they don't have a clear sense of guidance. On the individual side or investor side, what I'm seeing a lot of is a lot of investors are taking a lot longer to make their asset allocation decisions. So where, you know, maybe you'd say, okay, you know, 6 month period, now I'm seeing people drag it out like over a year in terms, at least a year in some cases, where they don't know where they want to move because they're not sure about what the policies will be going forward.
Are we getting any kind of uptick in foreign investment in the United States? I hear a lot of foreign money coming in and buying real estate, et cetera. Have you noticed that at all?
I've heard, you know, certain areas I've heard of, like, in terms of residential or rental properties, I've seen some pickup in that. Commercial properties, maybe some of the top key spots out there, but in general, I mean, you've got, you know, strip malls that are empty along certain sections of this country, which I don't know what's going to happen there. You are seeing, though, investors come in clearly on the corporate side of the market, just in terms of corporate bonds and high-yield bonds. They've seen a lot of flows in terms of foreign investors coming into the U.S. market. Mm. And treasuries, again, that's more a flight to quality than anything else.
Gotcha.
So, Colleen, we only have about a minute left. Going back to my grandmother who's passed, let's assume she had a couple million dollars sitting around and she doesn't really want to take much risk. What's the best advice you can give to investors right now, who a lot of whom seem to have a deer in the headlights look?
I mean, I would probably say, you know, don't stretch too much for yield at this point. There may be a better opportunity. We're in a very risk-on environment right now, so yields are very low. I would stay with high-quality credit, you know, credit quality. Doesn't mean it's AAA. It just means, you know, don't stretch for the yield and buy the lower kind of bottom-of-the-barrel stuff. And that could be in investment grade or that could be even in high yield. I would use the opportunity of this risk-on to maybe take some gains before year-end, if you can, to basically clean up your portfolio, if you will. So if you have some lower rated credits, be it whatever market, basically sell out of them, book the gains.
Gotcha.
In this type of
market. Yeah, well, I think we all know capital gains rates are going up. Hey, we're out of time. Really appreciate it. We also send our best wishes for the continued recovery of your neighborhood and everybody else back there on the East Coast.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much, Colleen. Michael Caranta, thank you so much for being in studio with us. Justin Hart, our board operator, thank you for your work. Thank you to Craig Blanke, who needs a speedy recovery, and Carmel Cheely, our account executives, and our programming genius here is Dave Sniff. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and we'll see you next week.
I'm Sergeant Povis McNitus, and I was injured while serving in Afghanistan. I can't thank the Warrior Foundation and Freedom Station enough for all the support they've given me during my recovery. What helped me the most was an airplane ticket home to be with my family. Please donate your unwanted car today to help reunite other injured warriors with their families for this holiday season. Call 877-411-DONATE for a free pickup and you'll get a tax receipt. 877-411-DONATE or visit freedomstation.org. Thank you and happy holidays to everyone.
When choosing a treatment for cancer, experience counts. As the nation's first proton treatment center, Loma Linda University Medical Center pioneered the use of proton radiation for the treatment of prostate, lung, and brain cancers. We treat more patients than any other center of its kind.
We follow the story.
What did we know before? What did the president know?
We leave the conversation.
Hillary's now at a wine tasting contest. We can't ask her.
Follow the leader.